Chapter 7. Immunity or Lunacy? Party Line Number 9. In order to ensure efficient immunity to protect yourself from a particular disease, you need to receive a small portion of the disease from either artificial, vaccine, means, or a case of any given disease via natural means. Only then can antibody production occur to greatly decrease the chances of coming down with a full-blown case of the disease at some later time. Antibodies are the immune system's main defense against the microbes that create disease. We are taught in school an antiquated version of so-called immunity, which is increasingly losing credibility in many scientific arenas around the globe. The entire notion that antibody titers, counts that occur through blood tests, can solidify a diagnosis for some disease has no basis in rational science. Nor does the notion that the presence of antibodies will prevent any given disease. Antibodies go up in the blood for one reason alone, and that is toxemia. The theory that one has to have a disease first to be immune from that disease ever happening again, all to the credit of antibody production, is about as smart as believing that you have to get burned first in order to prevent future burning. To begin, we must take a rational look at what exactly immunity is. Immunity is a defense system the body uses to eliminate toxic matter that has built up over a period of time. The immune system is wonderfully complex and kicks into place when more simple lines of body defense have not been able to eliminate toxic matter effectively, and now the toxicity has reached the circulatory system and organs. There are varying forms of white blood cells, which are the immune system's primary line of defense in regards to this elimination. Antibodies, then, are specially synthesized body proteins, which aid the white blood cells when toxicity reaches more extreme levels. I have sifted through a ton of data, and thus challenge anyone to present a single piece of evidence which proves antibodies are produced to defend against so-called germs. We've all seen microscopic photos of the valiant white blood cells undergoing phagocytosis, surrounding and engulfing of said germs. But this is not what is happening in these photos. The white blood cells are simply removing dead organic matter, or garbage, from the body that is no longer useful. These so-called germs are not attacking the body to make it sick in benefit solely for itself. In fact, that is the definition of a parasite, and parasitic infestations and infections are possible. But microbes, like bacteria, have a useful function for the body, and when they die off, they are consumed by white blood cells simply as a cleanup process. In reality, there is no immunity from germs, because germs are not the culprit opportunists they are made out to be, causing everyone they come into contact with to get sick. You've been told that vaccines stimulate antibody production, and these antibodies will protect you when and if the real disease comes along. However, there are children born with the disorder, agammaglobulinemia, which simply means they cannot produce gamma globulins, the chief proteins constituting antibodies. Therefore, they cannot make any antibodies. These are the famous bubble kids, since many of them live within ridiculous, love that Bubble Boy Seinfeld episode, artificial latex walls to limit exposure from the dirty world of germs outside. The children with this disorder who do not live in bubbles, however, and there have been many, are still able to recover from measles and other diseases as spontaneously as normal children. Why is this? Why has it not been adequately researched? The answer is simple. You don't need antibodies to recover from any disease, and the medical cartel knows it. Antibody tests, detection and stimulation products, however, are the central hub of their fraudulent wheel. To remove this hub is to collapse the entire scam pushed upon the world for decades. Antibodies have never been a scientifically proven relief of impending and harmful disease. Their presence does not guarantee you will be safe from any particular disease, in fact. There is a good amount of research still available to prove this point. In the British Medical Research Council report number 272 from May of 1950, there's an outline of a study on diphtheria done in the north of England. This study tested the correlation between antibody counts in people who were treating diphtheria patients and the patients themselves. The study found that there was no correlation whatsoever between antibody count in the individual and their ability to develop diphtheria antigens, which simply means getting diphtheria. In other words, There were people with diphtheria with very low antibody counts and some with very high. Other people who were attending these ill ones had extremely low antibody counts. Due to this lack of correlation between antibody and disease, the study was terminated and called a failure. Think about this well for a moment. If a research company does not come up with the expected results, for example, to prove a correlation between antibodies and disease, how long do you suppose they will stay in business? Do you think the pharmaceutical companies will pay them for any further research projects? Or in the case of university research, how long will the grant money keep flowing if the expected lab results are not forthcoming? The obvious answer is not very long. Dr. Peter Duisberg, a prestigious university professor and viral researcher for decades, has been attempting to tell people the truth about AIDS for 10 years. He went on national television and told the interviewer that he would drink up an HIV viral-infested cup of coffee right in front of him if asked to, without any fear of becoming ill, because his research had unequivocally found no correlation whatsoever between the culprit HIV virus and the disease AIDS. He was totally ostracized from the research community for it, although many colleagues went on record to say Duisberg was quite correct. They just didn't want to be the ones to say it and lose their research grants. In medicine, the result of research all too often comes down to the mighty power of the buck. Who's paying for it? Why do they want a certain level of results? These are the first questions that should always be asked regarding medical and pharmaceutical research. Medical research, thus, can become nothing more than an elaborate form of propaganda. If you want the truth, you can find it. But you need to have the drive to look beneath the lies, and my experience has been that very few people are willing to make this effort. In spite of the party line that antibodies are indicative of a protective reaction to disease, a very marked immunity exists without their presence. It has been proven time and time again that the more presence of antibodies cannot confirm a diagnosis of disease, nor ensure protection from it. Bacteriologists and other researchers have known this fact for a long time. Then again, if you've vested a tremendous amount of time and money in medical school, or if you require grant money for your research business, one can very easily, from a stance of mindless practicality, follow the germ theory party line. This is done with a fairly clean conscience, since there is plenty of material to support the theory that germs are the causative factors in disease. As time goes on, however, doctors of medicine are requiring larger and larger blinders to keep themselves from the truth. Antibodies should totally be stripped of their immense importance, since they are, at best, a secondary line of body defense. Party line number 10. AIDS was discovered in 1982. It is a terrible disease, highly infectious through sexual contact, and caused by infection of the HIV virus, which destroys a person's white blood cell line of defense. Thus, a person's immune system is severely compromised, leaving one virtually defenseless against the world's most common pathogens, where a simple cold can become a life-threatening disease. Without treatment, death is imminent. To begin to tell you the truth about AIDS, a major piece of epidemic propaganda pushed on the American public and the world by the CDC, let's first state that AIDS is simply a redefinition of an old disease called leukocytopenia. If you research old versions of the Merck manual, as well as older diagnostic texts, you will find leukocytopenia, meaning simply decreased white blood cells, was purposely graduated to acquired immune deficiency syndrome at a press conference held by the CDC in 1982. Leukocytopenia has identical symptoms to AIDS and was not considered a sexually transmitted disease, but a disease of toxicity caused from drugs and environmental toxins. The CDC claimed in 1982, without any confirmatory research, that HIV was the cause of this sexually transmitted disease now called AIDS, which at present was occurring primarily in homosexual men. They also made reference to Haitians and Africans who most likely brought the HIV virus to America. For years, the public bought this hook, line, and sinker. This was to be the CDC's propaganda masterpiece, but fortunately for us, it backfired due to the outspoken research of many a good and honest university researcher, such as Peter Duisberg, who we have already mentioned. The results of their research, showing that AIDS could not possibly be caused by HIV, was the subject of many a primetime television show in the early 1990s. AIDS has certainly lost its death sentence since then, but not from any form of medical treatment. It happened from a public who educated themselves and began to search for the truth on their own. People were coming down with the diagnosis all over the globe, from the erroneous HIV antibody test, which could show a Catholic nun to have the HIV virus. This test is still in effect today, ruining people's lives with the stigma of false disease. Many companies require their employees to have regular AIDS tests, and whether or not you come up with the diagnosis has much to do with the luck of the draw, but quite more to do with how clean your blood is. People who are in a high state of detoxification, with or without symptoms, usually wind up testing positive for the so-called AIDS antibodies. The state of detoxification could have nothing to do with how clean you live your life in the conventional sense, i.e., you don't drink and you don't use recreational drugs. Most people have high levels of blood toxicity primarily due to faulty dietary habits, as well as prescribed and over-the-counter types of medications. The all-too-common scenario with AIDS is that people test positive for the antibody when they feel fine. They panic and run to their doctor, and he places them on AZT and/or another terrible antiviral drug. The person then undoubtedly begins to have symptoms, which are attributed to the progression of AIDS, when in actuality, they are created from the poisonous medications they now have in their bloodstream. I've also read stories which attempted to prove that the actual AIDS virus was genetically engineered and administered upon the gay population as an experiment, which was to blame the gays for the beginning of a worldwide AIDS epidemic. Could this be true? Well, there is certainly no hard proof of this claim, and if it is true, they definitely failed miserably at it, this time anyway. The way governments run these days, and considering the out-of-control power available to the medical cartel, I wouldn't doubt it. But the proof is always difficult to come by, since tracks in this kind of conspiracy are generally well covered. The story goes that during the height of the Cold War, a Polish nationalist doctor and a viral researcher was allowed mysteriously with his wife and children to attend a medical conference in Italy. What is obviously strange about this to anyone who lived through that time in history is that all members of a family were never allowed to leave a communist bloc nation at the same time for fears of defection. Why come back if you could defect all of your family to the West for freedom? This is exactly what happened next. He and his entire family defected, and within a few years, he wound up head researcher at the NY Blood Center. Sounds very curious, but nonetheless. He supposedly sponsored a very experimental hepatitis B vaccine program in New York City, Chicago, and San Francisco. All their major papers then ran ads for gay men to try the new vaccine in 1971 and 1972. About 10 years later is when the major outbreak of AIDS began in those very cities. I am by no means asserting here that antibody tests are rigged, so to say, in order to provide an ample business population for medical professionals. Although I would not doubt this to be true in some of the cases, I mostly acknowledge that medical professionals rarely believe their antibody tests confirm disease. This is due to a general lack of education on the part of medical professionals in the comprehension of any other way of thinking besides what has been taught in medical school. The truth is, these antibody tests are most likely testing for a generalized level of blood toxicity due to poor dietary habits, prescribed and over-the-counter medications. Antibodies do have a purpose in the body, and that is a secondary line of defense to white blood cells in the systematic cleanup of body garbage. This is primarily the cleanup of large protein molecules that have made their way into the blood and intercellular fluids. These large protein molecules and the antibodies created to eliminate them are what create the positive antibody test results for any given disease. From this information, medical professionals usually misunderstand the test's true meaning and connect the dots of their limited education to form some party-line diagnosis. AIDS is a classic example of flawed CDC propaganda. There are so many inconsistencies surrounding AIDS, its diagnosis and treatment, that I would doubt a majority of medical doctors polled would show it in any major concern. A group of honest law enforcement officials should, however, move in to investigate the CDC with regards to the creation of false information regarding AIDS and HIV. This is a disease the CDC claims is responsible for approximately 50,000 deaths up until 1992. Yet when there is an autopsy of an AIDS death victim, it is rare you will find HIV. There are also thousands of AIDS cases walking around today worldwide, confirmed by the antibody test, with no trace of HIV in them. This is a confirmed fact that the CDC hysterically ignores, and papers like the New York Times never print. The ABC and CBS networks, however, did run specials on this information in late 1993 and early 1994. To no avail, the CDC still stands firm that HIV causes AIDS. A good question to ask any medical professional is, if one is tested positive for HIV antibodies, isn't that a good sign? Those antibodies, supposedly, are fighting off your AIDS. So the doctor should be happy you have them. Regarding HIV and AIDS, there are thousands of medically diagnosed AIDS cases that have never tested positive for HIV. Medical professionals cover their ground on this fact by stating the HIV virus must then be lying dormant or latent in the person's body. What a crock! If you, Dr. X, have diagnosed Jimmy Y with AIDS, and he is demonstrating classic AIDS symptoms created by the HIV virus, how could that virus be creating the symptoms if it is dormant? When you examine the correlations between AIDS case histories, you realize that the only thing it meant to have AIDS is that you are sick and toxic, and usually quite sick and toxic from self-induced terrible habits. That's all AIDS is. In the early days of my practice, I saw over 100 people who were diagnosed with AIDS, since they heard my nutritional program could save their lives. 90% of them were homosexual men who had a lot of aberrant sex with several partners. I would explain to them how this kind of repeated sexual activity is very draining and toxic to the body, and they would for the most part either slow it down or stop completely. Almost all of them also used recreational drugs on a regular or semi-regular basis. This also had to go. My success rate in treating these patients from 1984 to 1987 was nearly 100%. I am sure if they chose to go on AZT, as their medical doctors screamed for them to do, more than 90% of them would have died. I would venture to say from my professional experience that most AIDS people die from the poisoning they receive from antiretroviral drugs like AZT. Burroughs Wellcome is the top producer of antiretroviral drugs on the market, and they have completed many of their own studies to show that they are quite safe, and that AZT in particular is slowing down the progression of AIDS. The Concord Institute, an independent American research organization, came out with quite different results from their study, however. They found that 51% of the people using AZT develop lymphatic cancer. Do your own research. Go to the PDR and look up AZT. It may be found under antiretroviral drugs. Interestingly enough, under side effects of the drug, you will find many AIDS symptoms. It is a well-known fact in wellness circles today that those who receive a positive HIV test usually fare well without treatment, assuming they don't kill themselves from the depression and sociological stigma that ensues from the ignorance of the facts. Many people who receive an AIDS diagnosis and use it as an opportunity to heal themselves naturally, excel sometimes even better than they were before the diagnosis. Practically all that receive antiretroviral treatment are either dead or dying. Arthur Ashe was totally healthy before he started taking AZT. Kimberly Borgalis, who sued her dentist in Florida for supposedly infecting her with HIV, had a simple candida yeast infection that was blown into AIDS due to ignorance. She lost about 45 pounds and was eventually confined to a wheelchair from taking AZT. One of the more frightening sociological aspects of HIV antibody detection is that one can get completely different answers from two different labs on the same day. Fact is, if you get enough HIV tests, chances are you will eventually wind up positive. This margin of error holds true for most antibody detection blood tests. Furthermore, in the case of AIDS, to show up positive for HIV means absolutely nothing. Understand right here and now that there is no keynote study which proves that HIV causes AIDS. There have been press conferences on this subject that never made it to the major papers. Still, the medical professions will tell people that AIDS is a disease caused by HIV infection. There is no cure, and it is extremely fatal. Another great trick set out by the CDC regarding AIDS came in 1987, when they changed the disease's diagnostic parameters. After this date, the following diseases can also be diagnosed as AIDS: Candida infection, cervical cancer of the uterus, herpes simplex disorders, malignant lymphomas, encephalopathy, dementia, weight loss or malnutrition, heart attacks, strokes, cirrhosis of the liver, salmonella infection, TB, and my favorite, suicide. These parameters are way out of control and resemble more of a comedy routine than science.